Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Empower Up podcast. I'm your host today, Jeremy Boren, Gray Matters brand manager. Just a quick reminder to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out when you do that.
Scott, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Well, it's good to have you today. And there's just a bunch of topics that I want to get into because cybersecurity world is always evolving. There's so much in the headlines, especially in the industrial cybersecurity operational technology space where we thrive and where, you know, you've been building a bigger and super exciting team that is something I want to get into today because the capabilities at Gray Matter are expanding. And I think people need to know about those because they might have noticed some changes on our website and noticed some changes to what we've been putting on LinkedIn. So I thought we'd just start there today because it's a differentiator, you know, for us and just in the industry. If people are looking for people to work with, they should know about these. So one of the big things for us lately has been talking about specifically securing or building a secure network infrastructure as opposed to just saying blanketly cybersecurity. So can you help us understand, you know, what are the important differences there and what should people know about secure network infrastructure?
Yeah, so if you think of infrastructure as exactly the word it sounds like, right? It's the foundational pieces to everything else we want to do from a data standpoint. One of the things we've seen as a reoccurring challenge, we'll say, is that there are a lot of great technologies, a lot of great tools, a lot of great things people can do, but their network is not ready, right? It's it was designed 20 years ago. It was really left flat in layer two intentionally because it was the easiest way to deploy. And then that creates a bunch of challenges from a cybersecurity perspective, as well as just operational hygiene, right? Making sure things work. I'm troubleshooting where I might have challenges, et cetera. But from an attacker standpoint, a big flat layer two network is, they love them because you get on the network and you can see the horizon, which means I can attack everything I can see. It's very easy to propagate malware. And so foundationally, I think that's where a lot of times we're getting dragged in before we do more advanced technologies, more advanced tools and techniques. Foundationally, we need to make sure that we have the right segmentation in place. We want to have the network routing in place, just general architecture conversations. And so for us at Gray Matter, we kind of, rather than separating security and infrastructure into two different groups, we kind of want them attached to each other, but still supporting each other within their kind of different lens of the world, right? Making sure that I have good foundationally network routing, redundancy, resiliency, but also doing it in a way that I'm doing it in a secure way, that it's not easy to track my network. It's not easy to recon where my critical assets are. And then I can then take advantage of the more advanced technology. So we saw this as kind of a big need. So we started building up a lot of that kind of OT specific network knowledge, which I think is a key differentiator to a lot of what we do, is that there are very similar nomenclature and very similar view to network design in IT and OT, but there are nuanced differences that you want to be aware of as you approach these. And I think having that knowledge of the nuanced differences is where my team and our team at Gray Matter shines, is understanding, you know, how to properly architect and how to properly reference, say, for example, a Purdue or an ISA 95 or whatever, ISA 112, take whatever standard you want to apply to, but make sure you're applying it in a way that's practical and you're getting the value out of the architecture that you think you're going to get.
Okay, so I think that gives us a good example and understanding of what you're talking about when we're talking about network infrastructure. So when it comes to, you know, we hear managed services a lot, you know, talked about in our industry. I've always felt like it's so squishy, you know, what it really means. But what does it mean when we're talking about managed services and cyber at Gray Matter?
Yeah, I think this gets driven out of probably the number one challenge we hear from customers. Scott, I love the technology. I think we need to adopt it. I don't have the resources. I don't have the bodies. I don't have the skill set. And I don't want to be. You know, if I'm a manufacturer of widgets or whatever, I want to say that's my expertise. I want to be focusing on being the best widget maker I can be. I don't want to be a security administrator. I don't want to be a threat hunter. I don't want to build out all these full-fledged services. And there may be components I want to take on and some that I don't necessarily need to. I don't need that expertise because it's so finite, the need for me. So one of the things we kind of want to do is, rather than a one-size-fits-all approach to this, it's more of a conversation to the customer to understand how do they want to approach it. and what are the lack of resources that we can provide? Because we can provide a ton of resources, but do it in a way that applies to the environment and the design of the customer. Because we've got some customers who holistically outsource everything. They don't want to do anything other than make the decisions, but let someone else do the administration, care and feeding, monitoring, et cetera. And then we got some customers that they're somewhere in between, right? Where they say, you know what? We want you guys to do tier two or tier three. We'll handle the day-to-day monitoring. But when we get a OT specific event, we need to be able to call on you to actually help us out or have you review the OT specific events or be able to consult on, hey, we're looking at and you know this type of technology. Will it fit in our environment? And can you help us integrate it with the other systems we have in place? So that's really kind of our approach to managed services is kind of meeting the customer where they're at and building the solution around that. So we can do full-fledged everything across the board from, you know, hey, we're going to monitor what's going on with the events. We're going to send you summary of event of what's going on. We can even do an incident response documentation, all that fun stuff. Or it could simply be somewhere in between where, hey, Scott, we just want you to look at our console once a week, review the events, come up with a remediation or mitigation recommendation, and then we'll take it from there. And anywhere in between, we're happy to kind of solve that problem because it continually became the biggest challenge we saw with customers when they wanted to adopt OT security or bring up the maturity level that they're currently at. And that was the biggest challenge we saw was, I don't have the resources. We don't have the skill sets. It's so hard to find the right people. So that's really where we can kind of help and provide that as a solution solve for most of our customers.
And we know it's hard to find people. Gray Matter had an opportunity to meet with a White House deputy in charge of cybersecurity late last year. He was visiting Pittsburgh in the Tech Council. And, you know, he talked about how there's thousands of unfilled cybersecurity positions across, you know, the United States. And they're in companies like we're talking about that aren't able to find people who have the training. We have those people who are.
Exactly. And it gets even more niche when you look at OT, right? So there's a huge dearth of resources. There's just a lack across the industry. And then you take like the niche fields like OT and IoT, it gets even worse. And then if you're really looking for people with experience, and I'm very proud of one of the, if you look at the team holistically, we average probably 15 years of experience in this world per our engineer. Sure. So you get the value of someone who's seen it before, who's deployed this technology before. He knows what works, what doesn't. So I think there's a time to value approach as well. It's not just, hey, I need a body who can fill this role, who's been trained on it. It's can this person, and my favorite phrase, I stole this from Kamel, our VP of cyber, is, can we operationalize the technology? And that's critical to having that kind of niche experience. And it becomes very challenging to find people who've done, you know, you think about it, find someone who's done OT network segmentations on a manufacturing floor. That's not a lot of people because most organizations will do it one time. So if I work for an organization for 15 years, I may have done a segmentation project one site, one time. I may not have multiple projects where I've done this work. So having someone who I can leverage in that kind of angle is pretty valuable.
Yeah. And do you find too that the companies that are looking for those additional, you know, personnel resources, you know, on the OT side, like on the IT side, you know, they're good. Like they have that, they have the resources that they need, but it's where they're building up, like you said, the OT maturity. That's where they're looking for, you know, the managed services.
No, that's 100% right. It's probably the biggest what we see as the interaction is, hey, we've got maturity in IT. We've built our SOC. We've built our NOC. We've done all the things there. We're trying to extend our reach into OT. We don't have dedicated resources for that. Can you provide that second level, that second tier, that third tier advanced knowledge, right? That senior level knowledge as we get engaged with the OT people. I had a conversation earlier today with a very large F&B manufacturer, and that's exactly the challenge they had was at all their facilities, they know their maturity in OT is lacking, but they've never really reached security into it before because of lots of challenges. And so getting someone who's got that knowledge, who's done this before, gives a lot of credibility and getting security to get the reach into OT without being disruptive, which is the big worry every OT guy has, right? Here comes security. They're going to break stuff. They're going to tell me I can't do it this way. I'm going to lose. I'm going to have unplanned downtime, which is the big dirty word, right, in OT. And having an organization that has background experience in this say, hey, we know how to do this with minimal or no disruption. We know how to do this that enables you to do the right things. That gives a lot of credibility because we don't just have network engineers, and we don't just have threat hunters. We also got guys who've got controls experience, who've done PLC configurations, who are familiar with panel building, who've done all these other things that we see in OT. So them having a security background, but understanding the limitations or challenges of the control side becomes pretty critical and I think highly valuable to our customers.
Yeah, availability should be like flashing on the screen right
that's
now.
The big, yeah, that's the they always talk about the priority shift from IT to OT, and they always talk AIC and CIA. I always argue that it's not even AIC, it's AAA. It's availability, maybe yep. Safety, right? I think actually safety too, but availability takes king, because that at the end of the day, and that's I always laugh at the conversation I've had multiple times where the engineering team says profit center, looks at IT and says cost center, and explains it like, listen, every time we're down, it's costing the company money. We're losing revenue. And that's pretty impactful when you think about how do I apply. And I always use, I probably used it on this podcast before, but I always use the changing a tire analogy, right? Mm-hmm. IT security is I got a flat tire. I pull the side of the road. I fix the tire and I get back on the road as quickly as I possible. OT security is I'm doing 70 down the freeway and I'm changing that tire while I'm doing 70 down the freeway. There's yes. No pulling over. And that creates its own set of challenges that you need to be aware of, and having people who've been through it, who've got experience in it. I just think it's so valuable to our customers. And I think that's really the demand we're seeing is people who said, hey, have you been through this before? Do you know what we should be worried about? What are we missing? These are the things that we get asked over and over again that I think we really provide value in that sense that, hey, I've done this before. This is something you should be aware of. This device does this. We've seen these behaviors. These are the kind of things you need to be prepared to kind of mitigate or compensate for.
Yep, absolutely. And just the experience too, knowing what's going on. And you know, one of the big topics, and I think you mentioned that you get asked about it a lot nowadays because it's been in the news, are new regulations that have come down from the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. Very interesting, really new territory, I think, for a lot of companies and their cyber awareness level, you know, being heightened because of these requirements, mm-hmm. Basically proving to shareholders in the case of, yeah. You know, because it applies to publicly owned companies, your level of readiness in terms of cybersecurity, your level of awareness for your board of directors. What are some things that, you know, companies that are in this situation and will need to be reporting on this in their SEC filings that they should be thinking about and looking for help with?
Exactly. So I think the way I view it is kind of the way we saw Sarbanes-Oxley impact CFOs 20 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden now CISOs are now going to be responsible for how they manage disclosure. They're going to be signing off on what's get communicated out and things that are materially impactful to the bottom line, which we just got off the conversation about revenue generation, right? So in OT, everything about us impacts the bottom line. So now they're going to have to be very responsible in how they disclose, because for the longest time, and this is just the nature of security, if I had an event, I didn't want anyone else to know, but, you know, I avoided reputational damage. I also didn't want to open up myself for other people to attack. That's going away to some extent, not completely, but to some extent. Now I'm now having to say, listen, this is going to impact our bottom line. I need to disclose this out. And the challenge we're running into, and I think a lot of people are trying to figure this out, and I've got a ton of CISOs who are following every disclosure right now. How much do I disclose? Because there's that line between disclosing enough to damage me more and disclosing enough to make sure that I've given the data to the appropriate authorities. And that's the balance that we're trying to strike today. I think we saw a pretty good example of that with the recent Clorox attack and how they had to do their disclosure since it's in the public domain. I feel it's safe sharing that. You can see it, but they had to be very clear of how much it impacted their bottom line, how much that downtime was going to offset revenue targets, because it impacts the stock price, which is why the SEC kind of enacted these rules. I still think we're seeing, much like we've seen with other directives and other regulatory pushes, a lot of it is still being decided what the final guidance will be. And I think even then we'll see multiple reiterations as they fine tune it. If you look at like NERC-SIP, who went through like dozens of revisions before it got too ratified, and then even since then, it's every few years you get a new version of SIP. I think we're going to see the same thing with SEC. We saw the same thing with the TSA guidelines for natural gas, right? We saw the pipeline business. They have Rev 1, Rev 2, Rev 3. So they've gone and refined it. We're going to see the same thing, I think. And that's pretty normal for when we see regulations as it applies. But I think the important part is really understanding, what do I have to disclose? How materially impactful it is to my bottom line? And really tracking that information is going to be critical to kind of staying within compliance.
Right. And just from my reading of it, I mean, it doesn't seem like at least the spirit of the regulation is to discover exactly how a malicious actor penetrated a network so that, like, you know, others would be able to replicate it. It's, as you said, to just describe what the financial impact, that material impact is not something invented for this. That's been around a long time.
And
that's
exactly right.
Companies have to report on quite a bit. You know, and it's just like if somebody broke into a major, you know, storage facility and stole a bunch of product, that's probably something that you would end up, you know, reporting to shareholders.
Yeah. And in the past, you typically would report it in your annual filings.
Yeah.
So if an event happened in January, you had till the next January before you really had to disclose what happened or how impactful it was to the bottom line, right? Now they're saying you have to disclose it pretty close to the event time period so that people who are financially invested in you can know, you know, is this going to impact the bottom line of the company I'm invested in, which is, I think, critical, right? And I think more so than other groups, OT is going to be the highest impact because exactly what we were just talking about, that their revenue generating. So if an OT has an event that takes production systems offline, it's going to be highly impactful to revenue, because in manufacturing, there's always the, we even use this cliche quite a bit, is you can't make more time. There's right. No way to manufacture time. If I'm down for 3 days, that revenue is gone. There's no way to make up that loss. If I'm running a 24/7 operation, there's nothing I can do to make up that loss. All I can always be is a little bit behind. So that revenue is out the door. So being able to disclose how impactful that is can be pretty critical. And we've seen in some industries, you know, it's not even days. If I'm down for a couple hours, could be a 7-8-figure loss in revenue. You know, manufacturing and automotive is pretty close to that, right? When you look at automotive, if I'm down for an 8-hour shift in automotive, look at the supply chain, look at all the other impactful things, it hurts. And I think those are the things that they're wanting to disclose, is, you know, those financially impactful events are going to be kind of critical to it.
Right. And then, you know, the question might arise, like, how do third parties like us come in? I mean, there's a lot of different ways we can help. But, one that comes to mind, at least in this like regulatory framework, is, you know, having a response plan available is something that this, I think, one of the big objectives of the regulation is to make sure that companies have a plan in place in case there is, you know, a critical incident. And that's something that we help with companies with all the time. And
absolutely
could for somebody who's trying to formulate one for the SEC filing.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big transitions we've made over the last couple of years is moving beyond the technical impact of an event, right? These systems were hit. This was the malware. This is what we did for remediation. These are why you were able to get in. These are what policies were taken. Translating that into business risk is going to be key. And that's one of the things as an organization we've started moving in the last couple of years, to be able to say, this system, say at a controller or a production line, went down. This is what it meant to the business. I lost this much in output. I lost this much impact to other resources. Because if you look at as a whole, I may lose production at a component of my environment, but how did that impact the overall supply chain? So we've got some customers that one part of their facet of their manufacturing chain provides supply and materials to other components. So if I had that core crown jewel impacted, how did that affect everything else? And trying to translate that to business risk is pretty important. And that's one of the things as an organization we've started moving towards more commonly, moving away from just describing the technical risk and moving into the business risk as well.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we have a lot more on that. Actually, we have a pretty cool LinkedIn post from just a couple of weeks ago that kind of goes through four or five things to think about when it comes to those SEC filings. And it dives into like, well, when does the clock start on reporting? Because that's some things that have been confusing to folks. So check that out. I'll post a link to that so that people can find it. But there's that resource in other ones too.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big things is, as we get updated, we're going to update you as well. So as the SEC improves their guidance, which, as I said, we will see much more guidance as we saw it with every regular, we're going to make sure to keep you guys informed as well. So I think it's pretty important that, you know, if you're following that we're trying to help get you the information as we get it.
Yeah. And if you want to talk to us specifically about this, this is a great way to start a conversation, is like figuring this out a bit more and putting a finer point on it. I'm sure most companies have at least gotten started, you know, but if you need somebody, you know, to help you pick up the ball and increase that maturity level, you know, that's a good one.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's one thing I kind of wanted to announce, right? We've released the Gray Matter Maturity Model. For those who haven't seen it, we have to share it out. There's a LinkedIn post for that too.
I'll post it on here. Yep.
And the idea behind what we're adjusting the maturity model slightly different than what a lot of the other models out there is, we want to look at it from the capability of the site by defined by the type of site it is, and looking for what are the type of capabilities the site should have that it doesn't have. So that's really what we're trying to push towards, that growth and maturity, and really kind of define, I know where I am today. Here's where I want to be in the future, and here's the things I need to do to get there.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at the maturity level, and this will be on the screen here. You know, a lot of companies, you know, we know are not starting at, you know, zero. They're not necessarily at one. I mean, that could be, I guess, but, you know, it's more in that 2-3, you know, range, and they're looking to make it to 3-4 or even, you know, 5 on that maturity level. Right, Scott? And that's kind of like where we specialize. People identify those opportunities that are kind of high reward, low, you know, high reward. Or middle, low cost, whatever it is.
Well, if you look at it from this perspective, if you look at it from the risk associated with the type of site I have, that measures to the type of maturity I should have. Right. And I give you a great example. When we did the maturity model, level one for us is a disconnected network, right? A legacy network, whether it be serial, whether it be air quote air gap. We all know the dirty word air gap, whatever, whichever it might be, right? There are certain capabilities I should have regardless if I'm disconnected or not. And as an inventory is a great example of that. That's a base structure thing I should do no matter what my maturity is. Now, as I move up the maturity and I say I go to an internet connected, which is the next phase up, right? Level two. I have a whole new list of threats I am now concerned with that I didn't have as a disconnected environment. Knowing that I have these new threats, there's a certain level of capabilities I should now incorporate into my structure. And then as I move up, the concept behind what we were building is, as I move up and I go from internet to IT/OT converged, to highly available IT/OT converged, as I start to get that kind of skill sets and more technology modernization at the plant floor, my risk increase, and the technologies that we're recommending move from less reactive to more proactive because the risk requires that. And so that's really what we're trying to do, is really just define where I'm at from a capability standpoint and look for those gaps. And how do I close those gaps as quickly and efficiently as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the maturity model is all about. So I'll share more on that. And it's definitely a good way to kind of orient yourself with where you're at and where you want to go.
100%.
That's one way to think about it anyway. So, okay, cool. Well, we've already covered a ton of ground. A couple of other things I wanted to get to, because there's so much in the news right now. We had an incident in Western PA at a water utility. Activists targeted a specific type of technology, an HMI, I believe. And it affected, or could have affected, their ability to actually control some of their remote sites. And, you know, it's fallen into this category of hacktivists who are choosing a specific machine with a specific vulnerability. And it's not an isolated incident. So I'm just curious for our listeners, you know, what are you seeing in this realm? And what should people be thinking about, you know, in terms of whether it's a water utility, but it really could affect any type of, you know, facility.
So there's two common themes we're seeing from the attacks that we're aware of, even beyond the publicized one, because we've got a few that we've got some inside knowledge on. And the two kind of pieces we're seeing as themes is, first, good hygiene stops a lot of this. If you look at some of the attacks, something as basic as having a complex password policy, changing out the default passwords on a piece of equipment, that comes pretty valuable, right? Just start with the, 'cause that's basic hygiene. Don't rely on the vendor's default password, right? That's one. The second is, it's been a while since we've used this phrase, Jeremy, on this podcast, but I feel like it's time to bring it back. Defense in depth is very important, because if you look at a lot of the hacktivist attacks, they're breaking one layer of security and there's nothing behind it, right? So, hey, I get past the firewall and the world's open to me. And that's becoming a pretty common. We see a lot of these attacks where they had one mechanism protecting the whole controls environment, which I always find ironic. Because if you look in the critical infrastructure industry as a whole, any of the utilities, whether it be power, water, oil and gas, pipeline, whatever, we believe and love redundancy all throughout our engineering process. But then we get to security and we go single point of failure. I want a firewall. It'll have some policies. I'm good. I've got a firewall. I checked the box. And we're finding that it becomes very easy. I wouldn't say easy. It's the easiest way to attack you is if you're relying on a single mechanism for protection. So what we're seeing a lot of times is people who layer in their defenses, use different techniques and tricks, are less likely, and I mean extremely less likely, to be exposed when a hacktivist comes after them. Because most of the time, they are very skilled attackers, but they're really looking for attacks of opportunity. Someone who hasn't patched a system, someone who's got publicly addressable controllers, someone who hasn't closed the port on a firewall. These are all kind of common attack vectors that if I had a layered defense, it becomes much more difficult. So I may have a port that's open on my firewall, but and it only is impactful is if that's the only mechanism I'm using for protection. If I'm using contextual filtering, if I'm using deception, if I'm using event alerting, vulnerability management, zero trust network architecture, segmentation, all these other stuff, if I'm using all these, the risk that a single point of failure causes all my environment to be taken offline becomes much more less likely. I mean, it becomes it's much smaller footprint if I have all these other defensive mechanisms. And then secondarily, what we're also seeing when I have a layered defense strategy, the impact of the event becomes much less, right? If I have, for example, good business continuity, recovery and response built into my solution set, I can minimize the impact of the event. Instead of being down days, I'm down minutes. I recover quickly. I restore back good behavior. And then I mitigate out, but I don't lose operations for more than a small impactful time. What we're seeing is the people who don't have those good business continuation aren't backing up both the process and the data. Those are the ones that have the hardest time recovering from an incident. And this goes not just for hacktivism. This goes for ransomware. A lot of the other things we're seeing, what we're seeing is people tend to focus on a single boundary defense, a perimeter environment. And they don't think through some of the other function categories that we see. And, you know, you look at NIST, right? It's got the five categories: identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover. Everybody focuses on protect. Everybody. Put a firewall in place, give me ports, give me a VPN, et cetera. Very few people think about detect, which is proactively hunting threats, or even identify. What are my threats? Do I have these controllers in my environment? Are they unpatched? What are the current versions of it? All those are the kind of things we're seeing get leveraged because a lot of these people didn't realize they had an unpatched Israeli controller sitting in their environment because it was through a third party, and they became a target. Not because of anything they've done wrong, other than they bought a controller that worked for them or their vendor integrated a controller that worked for them, and somebody decided they didn't like it, and therefore they're now a target. So minimizing the impact becomes pretty critical at that point.
Yeah, and I think philosophically, like the single point of failure, like you said, I think maybe in the back of people's minds, they don't think of it as a single point of failure. And the redundancies are things like, well, we're way too small to even be targeted, you know, so that, you know, it's not as big of a concern, you know, forgetting the fact that it really has nothing to do with them. It's like you said, it happens to be made by an Israeli company, so that's enough for somebody to attack it, or it has. Exactly. And then the other thing is, I think a lot of us probably sort of unwittingly assume that especially industrial products are made, you know, with a certain robustness, with a certain built-in security. And unfortunately, that's not the case, you know, with defaults like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, and other things like that. Yes. that, you know, it's disappointing to know that and to discover that as you learn more and more about this space. But unfortunately, that's the case.
Well, it comes back to what we said earlier, availability, right? Yeah. A lot of people will sacrifice good security hygiene for availability. Right. If passwords 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's very easy for every other system, every other operator, everyone else to use that system. Right. I don't have to have a password vault. They don't have to remember a password. They don't have to log in. I know when I'm integrating with other tools, I can easily pass off credentials. I've made it very easy for availability. And I always talk about this. There's a paradigm architecture between practicality and security. I can be ultra secure, lock everything down, and I can get my job done day to day because I'm so locked down. No one wants that. The inverse is also true. I can be ultra practical and everything works and everything interoperates and everything's very easy, but I'm also very easy to attack. Yep. Because of those same reasons. So finding where that balance is going to be the critical component. Where do I want to be on that scale? I don't want to make it so hard my operators can't do their job, but I also don't want to make it so easy anyone can act like they're an operator. So that's that balance that you want to kind of find. And that's when we work with customers, that's 9 out of 10 times, that's the conversation we're having. Because I can make the air quote Cadillac option, you know, and say, hey, here's all the functions, all the features, all the tools, spend 7, 8 figures. You're going to be very locked down environment. But more than likely, your controls guys are going to revolt. They're going to hate their job. They're not going to get their things done. And it's almost as good as an event itself, right? If operations just doesn't work because everything's so locked down. So what you really want to do is, where's that balance live? And you start thinking through. And I talk about this with my team a lot. 90% of the time, my job and my team isn't risk. We don't look at risk acceptance as our job. Our job is risk identification. So you decide, here's the risks. Here's how they impact the business. Then the acceptance is on the asset owner, right? What do I willing to sacrifice to accept this risk? And really, what you're really trying to do is measure what's the reality of that risk, right? We converting that perception of risk into actualized risk, saying, hey, this isn't really a threat, or maybe it is a pretty big threat. And then deciding, you know, is the risk associated with it worth the cost associated with mitigating it? Or do you want to live with it? And that's okay if you want to live with it, but you should be making that decision from data, right? I now know the risk. I'm not just assuming, oh, I'm a small water utility in the middle of nowhere. No one wants to go after me. That's assumption of risk. You really don't know. You know, you got a bunch of open protocols and you're using a bunch of unsecure ports. It doesn't matter that you're a small water utility. You're a great opportunity to attack because you've made it easy.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great way to think about it. To call back to kind of the beginning, you know, we've covered a lot of topics, SEC regulations, you know, managed services, network infrastructure security. I know you get the question a lot, Scott, but, you know, how do people get started, you know, in a partnership to attack some of these things?
Yeah, favorite question. And it's probably the question we get the most, right? How do I get started? So I'm a huge proponent, and I think Gray Matter as a whole, we're a huge proponent of making decisions from data. So I think the first thing you look at is, where am I missing data? So we start with if you look at the 5 function categories, identify, right? A lot of times just starting, do I have a good asset inventory? Have I done a risk assessment? Do I understand the components of my network? Have I settled on a standard I want to apply to, right? Because there's so many different standards out there. So starting with those things, right? And obviously Gray Matter, we can assist in that. We do a ton of assessment work. We do documentation. We've got a number of different standards we've worked with. But really starting there, right, is, do I even know my environment? Do I have an asset inventory? Do I know what standard I want to adhere to? If I've got those pieces, then I can start looking to say, okay, where can I put the right protections in place? What are the right technologies I should be leveraging? And what might not work, right? What are the things that are irrelevant, right? So if I've got a tool that focuses very heavily on layer 3 routing and I have a whole big flat layer 2 network, probably don't invest a whole lot in the layer 3 tool, right? But really understanding that and really getting to understand, because it's amazing how often I have this conversation and I make the same joke over and over again about the Excel sheet that everyone knows is out of date. Every controls engineer, every supervisor, there's an Excel sheet. That Excel sheet's supposed to have all their asset inventory in it with MAC addresses, IP addresses, device type, all that stuff. And if the controls engineer is being honest, 9 out of 10 times, they accept that spreadsheet's out of date. they just can't, because they've got their day job, right? They've got to go keep the line moving. Keeping a spreadsheet up to date is not something that becomes a priority. And, you know, after time, the more it's less of a priority, the more out of date it gets. So starting with that, right? Start with the data first, right? And that'll drive your decisions, right? Because if you start from there, then you're not working off assumptions. You're working off of good data. Say, oh, we need to look at our firewall policy, or hey, we don't have good documentation. Maybe we should update our documentation. So really trying to package all that together to make your decisions becomes critical. Get the data first, get the data to understand, and then use that to drive your decisions. Because there's also sometimes when we look at things, we assume something will be a good risk mitigation strategy, but then we find out, A, it's only going to mitigate a little bit of our risk, but it's going to be exponentially more expensive than maybe something that mitigates a lot more of our risk, but is cheap. A great example of that is password policy. It's amazing how often people want to invest all these things, but they're using plain text passwords. Like, start there, right? That's a simple way to be, but you have to really know, what are we using for passwords? You know, are we storing them in a password vault? Are they in a Word doc that everyone just gets off the share drive? You know, these are things we see all the time. Are they sticky notes on all the monitors on the HMIs? But start with data first, collect it. How are we approaching these things? Apply it to a best practice. We're big fans of NIST CSF just because it simplifies a lot of the big challenges. But then take that data and say, okay, here are the areas that we're good at, where our strengths are. Here are the areas that our weaknesses are, that are opportunities for growth. And then decide, how do I replicate my strengths and my area of weakness? That's really what worked well here. How do we make what worked well here work well with our areas that we're not doing as well? And that has to be driven by data. So assessments, asset inventory work, all that, network auditing, all those are kind of the things I always encourage people to start with, just so that you're making a decision driven by the facts.
Right. And these are things that, you know, if you're in a leadership or a management role and you're listening or watching, you know, you may not be aware of, but, you know, your controls engineers may be aware of, but it's hard for them to say these things out loud necessarily, you know, that there hasn't been an asset inventory in a long time or something like that, because nobody wants to, you know, put that up to the top of the email inbox. So that's why, you know, people like us who can liaise between, you know, the leadership layer and the controls layer, you know, and know the OT space, and kind of spotlight those things and get them on the road to being right.
Yeah. And then, I mean, really looking at it from a perspective of, let's take a step back and look at where our gaps are and look at what is achievable. Because I think a lot of times people think, well, I don't even want to get started because that's going to be 3 to 5 years of network segmentation. That's always the easy one to pick on. Well, great. Network segmentation has high value, and I'm never going to say it doesn't. But maybe there's some other things that have almost equal risk mitigation that aren't 3 to 5 year programs, yeah. Right? And but having that data to make that, and really from a business standpoint, say, hey, yeah, we want to move to segmentation, but maybe we should start with X, right? Maybe we should close these unsecure ports on our firewall. That's a very quick fix. And look at, it's a pretty strong, because look at all the places where we're using port 442 or port 80, right? Start there. It's like, okay, these are some quick fixes that allow you to garner. And once you garner some successes, you'll find it becomes much easier for the next one, right? When you start to see, you get more buy-in from the controls guys, say, oh, that wasn't that painful. We closed a couple ports and yeah, we found a better way to do this. Then you start getting buy-in, and that's probably the most important part. When you look at the interaction between the security and IT groups and OT guys, that inherent distrust we always talk about, it really becomes good when you start getting a couple of wins and the controls guys see those wins. They're like, okay, these guys are trying to help. Let's maybe take on a little bit more. Maybe we're willing to look at a 3 year or 5 year segmentation project because we've mitigated the low hanging fruit.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Well said. All right. Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking time out to talk with us about these topics. If you don't already know, graymattersystems.com is where you can find us. Under the events section, events and training is what it says. You can find out about virtual events like this one. And we do in-person ones as well. We're going to be in Florida and some other places coming up early in the year. And we're constantly updating there. So I just encourage you that if you've been to our site before, or if it's your first time, keep an eye on that part of the site. And of course, follow us on LinkedIn, where we post all of this good stuff too. So Scott, thank you again. Appreciate your time today.
Love doing it. Thank you, Jeremy.
Now,
That does it for this episode of the Empower Up Podcast. Rate, review, and follow us at Apple Podcasts. And to learn more about our cybersecurity offerings, visit us at graymattersystems.com. Look under the offerings section for industrial cybersecurity, and you can get all the info there. All right, see you next time.